Welcome to another episode of You Conversations, where we have science-based, health-focused conversations with University of Connecticut Doctor of Physical Therapy students. I am Mary Beth Osborne, and I am a physical therapist and professor in the Doctor of PT program. Today, we are here with four students who are examining the topic of addressing the stigma surrounding men's mental health. So tell me a little bit about yourselves and how you decided to explore this topic.
So my name is Dennis Shannon. I'm a doctor of physical therapy student at the University of Connecticut. And as for my interest in the subject, men's mental health, or just mental health in general, is only a subject that I've been interested in the last couple of years. I think I went through my undergraduate studies kind of like with this naive ignorance that actually sort of led to a strong mental health. Like, I ate well, exercised well, studied often, and I kind of just kept life so simple. And then when you graduate and you get out into the world, I went through some hardships that kind of made me realize that life isn't as simple as I was trying to make it. And so over these past few years, I've directed a lot of my focus towards my mental health and what the mind is capable of. And I remember being approached to this topic by Gramos, and he talked about this, and my initial reaction was, I don't want to talk about that, I'm not comfortable with that. But then it kind of hit me that that's the point. You know, that's the point of this this whole topic, is to get comfortable with talking about this. And so that's kind of why I believe that this may not be the easiest conversation, but it's certainly the right one, I know, for me, and I think for many other people.
My name is Matthew Kalashik, and I'm also a doctor of physical therapy student here at UConn. Similar but different to what Dennis had said, I have had a very long journey with men's mental health. I was diagnosed with anxiety when I was 12, and it's been a journey along the way. Very similar, Gramos asked me if I wanted to do this podcast with him, and I agreed. I said what Dennis said. I was like, I don't really want to talk about that. It's just been a tough subject in my life. And then I sat down, took a week, and thought about it, and I was like, that is exactly the problem. That's why it is so hard to talk about, is because people along with me don't want to talk about stuff like this. So I made that change, and I was like, okay, I think it would be a good thing to talk about.
Yeah, hi everybody. I'm Gramos. So I came up with this idea of talking about mental health. It's something that I had always interest on, and I didn't really have like a particular reason why I wanted to do this. I just knew that it was something that it was kind of overlooked. And also me coming from, I'm from Albania, so I'm coming from a country where men's mental health is also something that doesn't really exist, like being addressed, because, you know, it's like that old notion of being a man and dealing with stuff. So I wanted to talk about this, and I thought that these guys would be like a good match to talk about this, because we hang out all the time, so we kind of know each other.
Yeah.
Hi everyone, I'm Quinn Strassfield. And I was very interested in this topic when Gramos brought it to me, because I've had the opportunity to help others kind of along their way through their mental health. And what I've kind of found is you can't really empathize with their struggle until you kind of go through it. So having gone through those experiences myself, I can actually finally put myself in their shoes a little bit and kind of gain a better perspective on what they were going through, rather than just kind of trying to, you know, support them in their journey. So that was definitely eye-opening, and I'm glad I have the privilege of working on this project.
And I think you guys picked a fantastic topic, because I have a strong interest in educating the world and the community and our physical therapy community about how we can help people with mental health. That, you know, exercise and physical activity has been shown to decrease the symptoms of depression and anxiety. But specifically this topic of addressing the stigma of addressing mental health concerns in men is even more pressing. I think that stigma is a huge thing surrounding mental health. But then if you drill down even more, talking about it as two of you said that didn't want to talk about it, or this isn't something we want to talk about. And that's precisely what stigma is mm-hmm. is avoiding the topic, or saying that there's something wrong with you if you have depression or anxiety.
So I think a good place to start is just kind of talking about what a stigma is and how it could have started. And I think a stigma is this heightened negative emotion that we attach to a thing regardless of the accuracy. And this could relate to men's mental health by like saying that mental health or having mental struggles is some sort of weakness. And I think a good analogy that was once explained to me was sort of if you've ever been driving and then you kind of realize that you just get to your location automatically, and it's like it's because you've made that drive so much that your body is aware of how to do it greater than your mind, and you just become conditioned, and it requires such little thought. And so in terms of the impact that the stigma can have on men is that you get told early in age, or you're shown early in age, that the right thing to do is anytime you feel some heightened emotion like sadness or anxiety, the right move is to just bottle it. And, you know, it may not present on the outside, but that's going to come with some negative symptoms on the inside. And so just you become conditioned over and over into bottling these emotions, and it could have a serious effect on one's health.
Yeah, and I don't think you always realize that bottling is not feeling, and so that's like numbness.
Going along with this, we have a clip that we wanted to share that kind of shows how the stigma, it's a little, we want to show how this clip does.
Who do you call when you were at your lowest? Who is that one person?
Soul. Nobody. No one. Because I'm all alone. I think I speak for a lot of people when I say I don't call anyone.
Nobody. I'm a guy. Nobody gives a
speaking for the guys when I say this. Literally, no one. Can you all call someone? Nobody. Just nobody. No one's talking to me. You guys.
So yeah, that's pretty much I wouldn't say like a representation of most of men, but like there's a good portion of men out there that feel like this and have no people or friends to talk to, and even if they have, as Dennis already explained, there's this stigma that also their friends might perceive them as weak if they show kind of emotions when it comes to mental health. So as we said in the beginning, like a reason why we wanted to do this and why you guys decided to do this, and that's kind of I respect that I even if you were like uncomfortable talking about this, you just like went for it, you know.
Yeah, and I think I've heard that clip now in rehearsing this podcast and going through our studies. I've probably heard that about 5 times, but like the part that really stuck with me this time around was that I didn't think anyone cared. And I think that it would be a good takeaway from this is there are people who care, and finding people who care and being able to feel comfortable expressing that is something that maybe men are lacking today.
I think hearing something like that is good because those thoughts aren't necessarily always said. So hearing them all in a compilation like that, it really gets you thinking like how many other guys feel this way and how can I help with that?
I feel like it's powerful.
Yeah. Tough to hear. Yeah. It's tough to hear, like, I don't know, I've had some of those thoughts before, like, oh, I can't go to someone about stuff or whatever, fear of rejection or whatever it might be. So hearing all of these other men with different voices say it, it's like, wow, I'm not alone in that.
Exactly. There's also like the thing is that how men present their depression, it shows that it's also different from what like the classical signs of depression are like, because usually it's like sadness, worthlessness, and like excessive guilt. But like some studies show that men kind of hide it better, and at the same time they compensate by overworking, isolating, excessive distractions, and sometimes also abusive in nature, because it's like things like accumulate inside, and there's a point that like I call it like a breaking point. So we also see some, we talk with Matt about this, like sometimes on social media when some guy says that they're not feeling good or some they went through something difficult, just the comments or like people suggest just like, yeah, just you're a man, just work out and improve yourself, but that's like overworking, overcompensating. And how good is it when you are not mentally well.
So you're saying that social media kind of perpetuates that, bottle it up, stop talking about it, and these symptoms that you're speaking of, it just sort of emphasizes doing that.
Yeah. Apart from just men's mental health, social media kind of brings out, it shows you a lot of like the tougher sides of pretty much any aspect, and I think it affects this equally.
I have a study here from the American Psychology Association. It's called Helping Men Help Themselves, and it's from a University of Missouri counseling psychology professor, Glenn Good. And he says, I don't think that it's biologically determined that men will seek less help than women. So if that's true, then it must mean that it's socialization and upbringing. Men learn to seek less help. And that's the end of the quote. So I think one of the big ways, one of the big takeaways is that this isn't in our nature. It's not, we're, you know, you're not designed as a human from birth to every time you feel something like that, just bottle it up and never express it. It is more nurture, and it's something that you get conditioned and learn to seek less help and not express these feelings.
I think that's a great point, because I feel like there's definitely a lot of men that think, oh, I'm this way because I'm a man, or I'm this way because of my biology, where that just isn't the case. Like, you're not born to cope in a worse way than someone else would be. It's it's learned behavior from the world around us and what you grew up with.
Yeah, it's like the society's expectations, being the breadwinner, the provider, the stronger version of the human being, you know.
Yeah, it's just like a standard male stereotype kind of thing. And I interjected earlier when we were just kind of preparing for this podcast that men who are homosexual or transgender men, it complicates the conversation. So I feel like what we're talking about today is sort of more along the lines of heterosexual men and those standard stereotype roles that play into it. And a future podcast might explore the mental health aspects of the LGBTQ community.
Yeah, it's also like I saw that like men usually also use more drugs and alcohol in order to cope with the mental health issues, which sometimes also makes it more difficult also from healthcare providers to detect these signs of male depression.
Because they're masking it with substance abuse or substance use disorders.
So then they'll target the substance abuse, but then the root problem is still there. Because obviously you should approach the substance abuse, but what caused the substance abuse kind of goes under the radar.
Yeah.
Yeah, that self-medication is definitely a huge problem that we're facing.
It's like 6 million... like American men like suffer every year from depression, and this you can find under the Anxiety and Depression Association of America, which like it's just like a huge number, I think. And when it comes to men who die by suicide, I just found that the numbers are like really high, and in terms of comparing with women's death by suicide, is like almost like 4 times higher.
Wow.
Which shows that men mask it better, but at the same time the suicide rates are so high because it's kind of a lot more pressure, I think, on them when they are struggling with something like this.
I think it's been like built up because, you know, Dennis mentioned that, you know, men are like kind of conditioned to not go and reach out, but through these like societal things, but like, you know, once you kind of do have that conversation with them, you do kind of feel like they are kind of, you know, breaking down. Like, you might have like somebody that like has been like bottling it up, and then they finally like talk to you about it, and then they just break down. And it's kind of this like, you know, explosive nature that it has been like building up with a lot of men, and then it kind of reaches that point. It's not like a gradual kind of expression of emotion or feeling or anything.
It's bottling up to a point where then it just, you can only hold so much, and then it kind of expresses itself in sometimes a really negative way.
Yeah.
In my own experience, I have had a lot of my male friends who grew up with this mentality of, I need to be the man of the house, I need to be stronger than everyone around me for the sake of my loved ones, which in and of itself is a good thought. Like, you're trying to help others, but you also need to help yourself. And these men end up expressing in a very explosive, and it's just a tough way to express it, and it's not the most healthy way, and it's not their fault. It's just the expression could have been.
And what's funny is also because like research shows that 8 out of 10 cases of like men treated for these mental issues like are responsive to treatment. So it seems like the biggest issue, like problem, barrier is like starting that journey to take care of yourself. Because once you start it, like 80% of men respond positively to
it. Wow, that's really powerful too, I think. And back to your statistic of 4 times the number of men die from suicide than women. I mean, and men are roughly half of the population, so there's something different. And I think you guys are hitting on it in the messaging from early on, and the cultural pressures that Matt mentioned. And then, you know, the key sounds like if we can connect people that are struggling or men that are struggling with the solutions, which I don't know, you guys are going to get to,
right.
I know.
Yeah.
But yeah.
A lot of it is, like Gromo said, there has been evidence that you respond well to treatments. So it's that, like, everyone who's ever been to a gym or is a consistent person who works out, you know, the toughest part of starting up your workout routine is that first day. And I think it relates to the subject in the sense that, the path is there to recovery. However, it's taking that first step and acknowledging that it's okay to seek treatment. And I also did want to go back to what you said about, tying this in with homosexual men or transgender men, where I think one of the big things that we're discussing is that there isn't one thing that a man should be, and that if we start thinking like men should be the provider, men should be the breadwinner, men should be the strong one, the stoic one, the one that doesn't show any emotions, then everyone kind of has times in their life where that's just not the case. And if we start hammering home this message that that's not okay, then this will lead to some of the problems that we're discussing.
Mm-hmm. Moving into some of the tips for men's mental health and moving forwards, this is a very tough subject to report on because there aren't any scientific studies that tell what works, because we are currently in progress of fixing it. Through a lot of the different healthcare organization websites that I have looked through, there's 5 main topics that they say that men should start in their life to help with their mental health. The first 3 are exercise regularly, have a focus on their nutrition, take up hobbies, and try to keep yourself busy and don't just sit around all day. And then the 2 big ones, which I think have the largest deficits in, is seeking counseling and social connections, talking about men's mental health or just mental health in general. So moving forward, there is 2 ways to look at this. There is the typical way that America handles healthcare problems, which should be reactive medicine, where after the problem has already started, okay, what can we do to fix the problem? When if we actually want to see real solutions and a change in this, we have to act on the reactive, but we also need some kind of preventative action. For this case, that would pertain to the younger generation. If we let the younger generation grow up into what we're currently living in, we're going to be in a vicious cycle of this continually happening. So in the process of helping the adults now who live with men's mental health challenges, we also need to help the younger generation.
And so one of my favorite films from the last decade is, I mentioned before, was 8th Grade, directed by Bo Burnham. And I was watching an interview of his from before it started, and he talked about he was trying to write, when he was in the process of writing the film, he was thinking, should this be about a boy or should it be about a girl? It ended up being about a girl going through her last week of 8th grade, and she suffers from anxiety and just a lot of the stresses with being a teenager. And he did his research online, and he said that everything that the women were posting were about feelings and souls and stuff, and everything about that the boys at that age were posting was about like Fortnite and video games and stuff like that. And so it's got me thinking about when in our lives is the stigma beginning, or when do we start, or is there a good age that we can target in terms of our interventions in order to prevent those cycles from continuing over and over again?
Yeah, I mean, also, Matt, you mentioned that one of the biggest things, like, to counter this stigma is, like, the counseling. It's funny because I also found that in terms of healthcare providers, the referrals for mental health services when it comes to men are only 36%. So we also see that, like, doctors may overlook the signs of male depression or, like, mental health issues, therefore less referrals. especially like in older white males, which have also, I think, the highest rates of death by suicide, but I'm not sure. I think I saw something.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, so, and the thing is that it's estimated like 75% of men with depression go undiagnosed, so I think a very big part of this is also educating the healthcare providers and that generation of healthcare providers that maybe still have this mindset that, yeah, a man is a man, so I'm going to treat you for where you come in, what is visible, but I'm just going to automatically ignore, not on purpose.
Yeah, I mean, and if the person, if an older man comes in for a quick physical, the way the health provider asks, are you depressed? Are you having any problems with depression? It's like...
They're
actually,
quiet.
Yes. You know, it's like depression, incontinence,
check
you know,
yes or no.
Yeah. So I have two things to say real quick and just to interject. But Gramos, I think that's powerful. Also with the 30% of referrals are for men to counselors and or for mental health treatment. And they're half the population again. Mm-hmm. So those two statistics, the four times and the 30%, 34%, whatever, are significant, right? And then what Dennis was saying about when do we intervene, but one of my thoughts is, two thoughts, one is screening every year. And just like our screening process, we just had this annual wellness exam, and having it as a screening in that they fill out ahead of time is a little less...
pressure.
Yeah, pressure and a little less daunting than answering the question, are you feeling depressed? So that might be an annual thing in the physicals that they have to do that PHQ screening for depression and the GAD-7 for anxiety. The thing about adolescence and sort of intervening then, I feel like everyone should have a counselor like they have a dentist, you know, and that you have a counselor and that's just your counselor. And like, if you are having an uptick in struggles, then you go see the counselor that you know, like you'd go see your dentist if you have a toothache. And that helps concurrently dispel that stigma. At the same time, you have someone when you need it. It's like your fire extinguisher, you know, that you have a counselor that you know and that can help you because you have a relationship. What do you guys think about that?
Along with screening, from my case, I started my mental health journey when I was 12. So, yes, absolutely. Approaching it in a less daunting way is very important. For the younger generation, I think it's dually as important to be aware of the signs of when someone, especially a younger kid, is suffering from these mental health things. I'm very fortunate that my parents were very involved in my life as a kid, and I ended up going to therapy at a very young age for it. If they weren't aware of the signs, it just would have went under the radar for as long as it did until it blew up. So along with screening, just being aware of the signs, I think, is a very important thing to take note of.
And I think men's mental health is mental health, and mental health is health. So I think that's such a great idea of being able to recognize these signs earlier. And like a way to do that is the counseling. So I like that idea of a counselor, kind of like how you think of a dentist. Your yearly, semi-annually checkups are a great idea to kind of catch these before... Right, and stop them right in the bud.
And this all goes into that preventative action. This is trying to get away from that reactive and deal with it after it starts. It's trying to be ahead of the game and be aware of it.
And think of all the benefits to our healthcare system of preventative medicine rather than sort of the treatment after everything.
Right.
And so more resources for other treatments.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why we are like physical therapy students, you know. We know how important it is to prevent something rather than cure it. That's why we promote like healthy living, lifestyle, exercising. So.
That's the whole purpose of this class, right?
Yeah. No, exactly.
Yes.
But I think like there's also some research shows that like clinicians are also being more and more aware of this issue. So they're paying more attention to signs that might be different from the classical type of depression. So, for example, I think there was this guy, John Robertson, who was like a past president of American Psychological Association that provides also counseling for men, that he had like changed his office to like wood paneling, leather seats, sport themed, you know, just to make men feel more comfortable. there was also another guy that he took their kind of, I don't want to say clients, but like in a walk and go and grab some food. Like,
perfect.
Go like, you know, throw a ball and something. So
yes,
people feel
experiential.
More
yeah. I think that gives you a little more rather than the lay on the couch sort of cliche of you're the patient and I'm here to fix you. It's more like we're two humans that are going to have a conversation, and I might have some knowledge about recommendations or helping you understand or reflect on what your problems are.
Yeah. Also, the language that they started to use now is like male friendly, I would say. So they use like meetings or consultations instead of sessions, or at the same time strategy and goals rather than treatments. So that you make like men feel like, oh, this is not like something that is wrong with you, but we're going to still take care of
it. Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
Some of our closing statements, we have a clip of a famous UFC fighter who, after one of his fights, he wanted to leave the ring with a message. So we're going to play that for you.
It's also worth mentioning this particular fighter is from Liverpool, England, and has a very, very heavy Scouser accent.
I woke up on Friday morning at 4 a.m., to a message that one of my friends back home had killed himself. This is 5 hours before me weighing. So Ricky, lad, that's for you. But there's a stigma in this world that men can't talk. Listen, if you're a man and you've got weight on your shoulders, and you think the only way you can solve it is by killing yourself, please speak to someone. Speak to anyone. People would rather, I know I'd rather, be made cry on your shoulder and go to his funeral next week. So please, let's get rid of this stigma and men start talking.
Yeah, that's pretty much sums up some of the things that men go through. And like, I don't know how it feels like just to get a call that one of your friends just died by suicide.
And for those who don't know, a fighter will fight on a Saturday, but they weigh in on Friday, where you kind of have to just completely drain your body of a lot of water, a lot of salts, and it's like you're knocking on death's door just trying to make a certain weight. And to be in that state and get that phone call and still say in the mindset for a fight the next day, it's a lot to carry. And I think, you know, he really let it out right after, and it's a great message.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much for your information and research and insights and being vulnerable yourselves to help move forward on this topic. I feel like it is just starting to enter the conversation in the world, but I think that our roles as physical therapists are going to help with improving the outcomes.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.